questions right now, and while you think of your questions, I want to remind you the way we support these meetings is to take a free will offering so we can bring in speakers like this. I much appreciated Keith coming. Yeah, we've been to Mount St. Helens a number of times and seen the scenery, and hopefully this will give you a desire to go and on one of these tours and see what really happened there. So we're going to take a free will offering, and remember, we're a 501c3 organization, nonprofit, and if you want to get a tax break, we'll need a record, and you know, either check or put it in an envelope with your name on it, and then we'll get you a receipt for tax purposes. So if the men could come up and do that while you're thinking of questions you might have, I will bring the microphone up to you, because we want to record the question as well as the answer. So, questions that people may have. I don't think you stumped them that well.
I answered them all.
This is your chance to stump the professor. Here's your chance. Yeah.
I was surprised you didn't mention the layering.
I'm sorry?
The layering of sediments, like went down the Toodle compared to the Grand Canyon.
That's a very important point. I didn't mention it because I'm talking about the biology primarily. But you're very correct that there was rapid formation of layering in the sediments, and that is analogous or can be compared to rock layers, for example, in Grand Canyon. At Mount St. Helens, we saw the layering occurred very rapidly. At Grand Canyon, we're told it took millions of years. So we have something in real lifetime that I think sheds some light on Grand Canyon.
Next.
It occurs to me that after the flood, there were a lot of fossils formed because of rapid burial. Now, you've alluded to the rapid burial of the old growth forests, and of course a lot of animals were killed, that sort of thing. Have there been any fossils discovered in the aftermath of Mount St. Helens, or anything that appears to be progressing towards fossilization?
Well, I think the answer is I know of no definite evidence of fossils being formed, and that's a very good point that you make. The question, you know, we usually think of fossils. What does it take to make a fossil? And what most people say, well, it takes millions of years, and then it turns to a fossil. But I think the key thing in making a fossil is you need the right conditions. I have a friend who made a fossil of a pickle in a couple of days in her kitchen because she had the right conditions, the right solution. I don't think the conditions were optimal for fossil formation at Mount St. Helens, although there was rapid burial, but probably you need waters containing the proper amount of minerals that are soaking, you know, those organisms that are buried, for them to incorporate those minerals and turn into fossils. So, I'm not aware of any conclusive proof that there's any fossils formed, because I don't think the conditions were optimal for fossil formation, and they were after the flood. Okay.
Another question here.
How does the pumice act as a pesticide for insects?
Yeah, that's a good question too. The pumice or the ash, they're really the same thing. The ash is like a fine powder. And if you look under the microscope, it's all got sharp angles. It's little sharp particles. And what that does is it abrades or it scratches off part of the surface of the insects. Insects are covered by what's called an exoskeleton, their hard skeleton. And there's some wax associated with that, and it abrades that off. And they lose water. Their water just seeps out. And they dry up and die. It also plugs up their breathing pores, called spiracles, and it also clogs up their intestines. Imagine if you were eating ash. Not good, right? So in several ways. It kills insects. Airplane. What's that again? Airplane engines, yes, and it doesn't help car engines either. Yeah. And people in those days were carrying around spare air filters in their trunk. We were, I know.
Another question here.
I was just thinking, no doubt there was a provision for fresh water after the flood, but based on the example you were given in St. Helens, it was, you know, putrid water. It wouldn't have been drinkable. So I was just curious if you could maybe give me an example of how that might have looked like after the flood, because obviously they survived for some time before there was the water systems recovered.
Yeah, the question is how fish survived, basically, in such a...
Humans as well, for a period of time.
So I'm a little hard of hearing. Maybe I missed a part of it.
Well, humans as well. Like the there were eight that, you know, survived the flood. So what would have been the provision for fresh water after a worldwide
Okay,
flood?
I see what you're saying. I don't know for sure, but... Certainly, there was rain, you know, and rainwater can be collected. Maybe they collected it ahead of time. Maybe they had quite a bit of it on the ark to begin with. And so maybe it rained, you know, after the flood, and they, you know, that would be one source. The bodies of water were degraded, but maybe not all of them were undrinkable. We don't know that. That's another possible source. There's certain organisms could lose, like dew and so forth, readily. Good question. There's probably much more one could say if I thought about it. But.
Could you boil it?
You could maybe try to purify it yourself. Maybe they had a way of doing that. That's a good thing. Filter it, boil it. Very good. Very true.
Any more questions? If not, we'll... close this out. Keith will be available to answer more questions in the back here when we're finished. And,